Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hi, this is Rachel Berkovitz coming to you from Jerusalem. This is Unit 18 of 20, in which we're learning all the Mishnayot of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. We're smack in the middle of the fourth chapter, and we're trying to go through and see the last decree that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made after the destruction. And we're in the middle of Mishnah 4. Last time we saw a really interesting thing. Up until now, we've only heard about the decrees that were done post-destruction. But now we find out there was a model in which some anonymous group of rabbis made a decree, made a fix when the temple was standing. And this is really interesting because we thought the greatest mess up or bungle or rudeness was the destruction of the temple. But we actually found out that during the time when the temple was standing, some things can get ruined. And the thing that can get ruined is the song that the Levim sing. And the way it can get ruined is back with those Edim, those witnesses who don't show up on time. So that's thing number one. And this kilkul, that word we actually had in the second chapter where the minim, the sectarians, were trying to mess up the flow of the torches. And so they made a decree, and the decree was really interesting. The decree was that in the temple, where it's God's space, right, it has to be absolute truth of godly time. I cannot pretend that it's Rosh Hashanah when it's not. So I need to wait till the witnesses come and I can sanctify the day. But outside the temple, with the Jewish people, where we are the ones who create our own time and our own sense of how that time is experienced, we start acting like we're noheg. We act like it's Rosh Hashanah from the night that could be possibly the 30th of Elul, because if the witnesses come, it needed to have been Rosh Hashanah retroactively. And I can't make that retroactive, so I have to start. And so now we have a second thing that's quite interesting. Up until now, I had the Mikdash, the temple, and that was identified with holiness and the place and location of holiness, and I had the people outside where there wasn't holiness. Now, with this decree in the time period of the temple, and maybe even in the reality of it before, I have a reality in which in the temple, it's a weekday, it's a regular day. But outside in the Medina, it's a Yom Kodesh. The whole Am is acting as if, the whole nation is acting as if there's holiness. So like, imagine the flip. This is what's so brilliant and beautiful about the Mishnah. Imagine the flip of what's just happening. In temple, no holiness. Outside temple, Yom Kodesh. And we have the switch where it was Mikdash was location. And now we have the word Yom, day, a day of holiness, because this is one of the major radical transformations that happens after the destruction of the temple, is the switch from holiness of place to holiness of time. And I think if you think about your experience of Judaism today, it's one of holiness of time. Okay, so that's where we left off, that they made this decree. And they said, we're not going to accept the witnesses if they come after Mincha time, because that will mess up the ritual in the temple. And even though we know they're not coming, I'm still outside the temple going to pretend that after, from Mincha and on, it's a holy day. And then it says, Mishacharav Beit HaMikdash, when the temple was destroyed, Hivkim Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai makes a decree. What does he decree? Shiyu mekablim edut chodesh al kol hayom, that they would accept the testimony of the witnesses all day long. I.e., that was the first line of that Mishnah, right? Barishana, and originally they accepted the testimony of the witnesses all day long. I stopped them from doing that because it messed up things in the Mikdash. Now the temple has been destroyed. I don't have to worry there's going to be a mess up in the Mikdash. I can reinstitute Kiddush HaChodesh, the accepting the witnesses and sanctifying the new day. I can reinstitute it in the original format that it was supposed to be, that they can come all day long, even in 2 seconds before nightfall, and it will be fine, and I'll sanctify the day, and there'll be no mess up. So here we have something fascinating. Here, the decree of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai post-temple destruction actually reverts the mitzvah back to the original way it should be. And we also have an interesting fact that the sanctification of the new moon, which is done by human beings and human beings creating holiness, that doesn't need a temple. In fact, the temple causes mess ups, causes kilkul. And when I don't have a temple, I can put it back to the original way it should be. Okay, that is first half of Mishnah Dalet. Mishnah Dalet has a second half, and it says, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, V'od zot hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You thought that that was the pinnacle edition of the last decree that I'm going to tell you about? There's another decree. There's another thing that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decreed. What did he decree? Afila Rosh Beit Din b'chol makom. Now we're back to the Beit Din, right? We opened with the Beit Din. We're closing with the Beit Din. Even we're closing these group of takanot with the Beit Din. Even if the head of the court, and we saw how important the head of the court was in chapter 2, even if he's in any place, shelo yu'edim hochim ela lamakom havad. It doesn't matter where the Rosh Beit Din is. I thought the Rosh Beit Din was essential. I needed him to say sanctified, sanctified, and decree the whole that the month is holy. No. Even if he's not in the court, I only have the Edim Hochim, right? In chapter 1 was all about the Edim Hochim. I only have them come to the place of meeting, to the place, the physical place where the court meets. And so here too, now we're back to physical location, right? And we were closing this Mishnah and all these decrees of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai with the phrase like that the Beit Din is b'chol makom, right? This phrase of din or in the makom. And we had at the end of Mishnah 1, right, the phrase, right, achad yavna v'chad kol makom sheish bo beit din, right? These are parallel structures and language, and I want to argue there's a chiastic structure here. Do you know, look up what a chiastic structure is, right? It goes A, B, C, D, C, B, A. And so the A's on either side are saying the idea that a beit din can be anywhere. And we know that the concept of beit din was, although we're switching to unholiness of time, we still want to have some uniqueness or sanctity of place, and that is the Beit Din. And we see that the Beit Din can take the part of the makom, of the physical space. We can see that the Beit Din is the place where the new month is announced and is sanctified. So it's the place that creates this holiness of time. That was all those first chapters. And the other thing that we've now found out that the Beit Din does, because it's been emphasized over and over here, is these takanot, is these hidkin. Hidkinu, they make decrees, they make fixes, they create Torah, they're revealers of Torah. And the theme of Torah is going to go throughout this chapter. And so we see having the outside of this chiastic structure have emphasis on the Beit Din b'chol makom puts that emphasis. If you look, right, if you see that was my A's on either side. Now my B's are the V'od Zot. I have V'od Zot Hikid Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and I have the V'od Zot of Mishnah Bet, right? Before I finished with the chiastic structure, I forgot to say one thing. What's so interesting about this idea that it doesn't matter where the head of the court is and you thought he was important, you have to go to the institution of the court, right? This maybe is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Mishnah thinks Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the cat's meow. Over and over his name's been said, but he himself says, I'm not important. Even if I'm not there, it's the institution of the court that's important. And if you compare this language with the language at the end of chapter 2 of Mishnah 7 and 8 with Rabbi Gamliel, who kind of thought he was the cat's meow, right? Rabbi Yeshua had to go to him, holech to him in Yavna, right? And this might be a little bit of a rebuke of him, of how that although the head of the court is important, it's really the institution and what the court represents that's important. Okay. I see v'lozot, v'odzot is my B. And then my C, if you see the phrases at the end of Mishnah Gimel, I have Yohanef kulo asur. Right, the entire day is forbidden, and I have the word Kol Hayom repeated twice to me in Mishnah Dalet at the beginning on the first line and after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's decree. And then I see that that middle part, the part in the chiastic structure that's the middle, that there is no parallel to, which shows you the most important part, is the decree that happened in the temple. Is the decree that happened in the time period of the temple where the Am was creating Kedusha outside the temple and the mess up was in the temple, right? And I want to say, why is that the focal point? Because throughout this whole thing, we've been seeing this idea that not only are these examples of how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai rejuvenated the Jewish people post-destruction and how he uses the creation of holiness of time and how the new moon represents the holiness of time. This decree, right, it's as if he said, I'm going to take the model that's in the temple, i.e. in temple times, the court made decrees to create fixes. That's number one. And he's using that model that happened in the temple. Number two, what he's using is the model that is the concept of being noheg ketushah, right? Because what does the nation have to do when Russia, because of the confluence of the fact that Rosh Hashanah is the first day of the month, and I only going to know if it's Rosh Hashanah if the witnesses come and sanctify it, right? That dual purpose that happens on Rosh Hashanah that's been running throughout this whole Mishnah, right? What does that create? It creates this tension. Is it Rosh Hashanah? Is it not Rosh Hashanah? And I, as the nation, have to be no head Kedusha. I have to create Kedusha, even when it maybe isn't Kedusha, and that Kedusha has to turn into the real Kedusha. And that, I think, is a model for what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is trying to do post-destruction. We don't have the Mikdash anymore, but we have to use our human creation of the sanctity of time that we create by our noheg, by our behaviors and the rituals that we do. And by doing that, we can create Kedusha. We can create holiness outside of the temple. That's what this decree tells us. And he's modeling himself on that decree that happens in the temple. And he's saying the same thing. We, without the temple, can use the sanctity of time which we create and the rituals which we use on those holidays to create an experience of Kedusha. A Kedusha to me is a connection to the divine, because the divine is everywhere, right? And Kiddush HaChodesh taught us specifically that the divine is in Shemayim, but maybe the Lulav says the divine is in all places. And that can enable us to have a fix of the relationship post-destruction. And maybe this is a little drashi, but when the Mishnah ends, that the Rosh Beitin is in any place, is b'chol makom, right? Not just in any place, but in every place, right? If we said there was some mirror between the Beitin that happens on earth and the Beitin that in the heavenly courts, then who is not the Rosh Beitin except the divine? And if I say the divine is b'chol makom, the divine is everywhere. A basis for creating ritual and moving on post-temple and continuing to have a relationship despite the fact I've lost the holiness of place. Okay, that is the end of this little unit of the decrees of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And on one hand, it's like it's an ending. It's an ending, and what we're going to do now is going to be something totally new. But we're going to see literary links and conceptual links in the next section.
Mishnah 5 makes an abrupt switch to the liturgy on Rosh Hashanah. It opens, Seder Brachot, the order of the blessings. Now this phraseology is going to be interesting. In Mishnah 9, the last Mishnah of the chapter, we're going to hear Seder Tikiot, the order of the blasts. And the word Seder is interesting because I don't know if you know anything about the liturgy that some synagogues have on Yom Kippur. We have something called the Seder Avodah, the order of the service. And the word Seder is usually identified with a temple ritual, with the flow of the temple ritual. And now we have sort of the order of the blessings. The order of the blessings is also another word that you might be more familiar with, is tefillah, is prayer. Our prayer, what we call the Shmona Esrei or the Amidah, the silent prayer, is made up of blessings. When we say it's the 18, it's 18 blessings. So we're going to now look at the blessings that are going to happen on Rosh Hashanah. And we're only going to find out in Mishnah 7 that this is going to be the blessings that happen on Rosh Hashanah in Musaf, in the additional tefillah, which also links us to the Mikdash, because the Musaf prayer is the additional one, like the Korban Musaf, like the additional sacrifice. Now, nowhere in the whole Mishnah does it tell us what the names of the blessings are in such a structured fashion, right? In Seder Brachot, where it talks about the obligation to pray during the week, it doesn't even have this structure. Here, we're getting it for the first time. So you need to know something a little bit about the normative structure of the way the silent prayer works to understand what is unique about this structure on Rosh Hashanah. But let's open up and try to understand. It says, Omer avot u'gvurot u'kedushat Hashem. The person recites, says, and here it's interesting that it says instead of praise or blesses, the blessing about avot, about our forefathers, in traditional liturgy, that's Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, u'gvurot, the blessing that talks about the power and greatness of the divine, that the divine brings rain, that the divine can revive the dead, that free prisoners, u'kedushat Hashem, and the sanctity of the divine name, which is a blessing that talks about the sanctity and the uniformity and the holiness of the divine. Now, these three opening blessings stay the same no matter when you are praying, morning, afternoon, evening, Shabbat, holiday, weekday, those three always stay the same. And the last three blessings, I'm going to jump a little with your eyes, look down where it says, Omer Avodah V'Hoda'ah U'Birkat Kohanim. And the last three blessings always stay the same, no matter when it is. I have a blessing about Avodah, and here the Avodah is referring to the temple service. You might know it as Ritzeh, but it refers to the fact that we offered sacrifices. Hoda'ah, thanksgiving, giving thanks, that's Modim, and Birkat Kohanim, the bracha about Shalom. And it's interesting, right? Both the Avodah and Birkat Kohanim are making reference to the temple, right? Birkat Kohanim is another ritual. We're not talking about decrees, but another ritual that was originally in the temple. The priestly blessing was originally in the temple, and it's brought outside the temple, put into this synagogue prayer service, right? And I don't, maybe you know, or maybe you don't, and I won't talk about it for a long time, but the whole concept of creating prayer, having fixed prayers at fixed times in the day, which we see in tractate Brachot, is mirrored after the sacrifice rituals, the sacrifice that happens in the temple in general. So although we're now formulating it a different way, this is also an example of something post-destruction that continues the relationship between the Jewish people and the divine, having a Seder, having a structure of tefillah, of Brachot, and even the idea of a blessing that a human being can invoke God's name, that is something that the Kohen Gadol did in the Beit HaMikdash, did in the temple. And we now emulate that when we make blessings. Okay, so I have the three in the beginning and the three in the end. And then it explains, now I'm going to go back. Now it's going to tell me something unique about the center. Now, during the weekday, the center is where we make all our requests. We say, give us health and understanding and livelihood. But on Shabbat and the holidays, the middle blessing, usually there are only seven, so three in the beginning, three in the end, and then in the middle is one about the sanctity of the day, about Kedushat Hayom. But here we're going to see something different. Instead of having normal seven on a holiday, we're going to find out on Musaf Rosh Hashanah, we're going to have nine. So there's going to be three in the beginning, three in the end, and three in the middle. And this structure of three, threes, and threes we're going to see is going to repeat itself throughout the chapter. So what does the middle look like? It says, Omer Avot, Ugvorot, Ukudushat Hashem, V'kolel Malchiot Imahem, V'eino Tokea, Kudushat Hayom, V'tokea, Zichonot, V'tokea, Shofarot, V'tokea, V'omer Avodah Hodah Uberkat, Kohanim, Divrei Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. We're going to have a dispute in this Mishnah. This is the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. This is not what is done normatively today. He says, say the first three. And then one of the special blessings of Rosh Hashanah that's called Malchiot, that's called kingship, have it join in with them. Put it with Kedushat Hashem. It's not going to get its own blessing. It's going to be mixed with Kedushat Hashem. And you're not going to blow. Why does he tell you you're not going to blow? Because we're going to find out in an instant, the other two special blessings that are added, we're going to blow. Then you're going to say Kedushat Hayom, which is not special for Rosh Hashanah. It's about the sanctity of the day that happens, is the blessing that happens on any holiday. And that one, that blessing usually ends Mekadesh Yisrael ve Yom HaZikaron. Sanctify the Jewish people and the day of remembering. And in the tefillah, we call Rosh Hashanah Yom HaZikaron, and that theme we're going to see in a second in our Mishnah, the day of remembering. But Kedushat Hayom, right, is linked language-wise to Yom Kodesh, the holy day that we stand before. And the Kedushat Hayom, we all know, is linked to the Jewish people sanctifying the new moon, right? And that is why the blessing about the Kedushat Hayom includes both Israel and whatever holiday it is. Okay, so he says, say the blessing about the special holiday and blow. Then do an extra special blessing about remembering, the divine remembering the Jewish people, and blow. Then do a blessing that focuses on the shofar and blow. And then do the last three ending blessings. And so we have three middle blessings that are Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofarot. Kingship, remembering, and shofar that are unique to Rosh Hashanah. That's the view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and he thinks you blow the shofar with remembering and shofarot, but not on Malchiot, and you blow the shofar with the sanctity of the day. The sanctity of the day. Then Amar Lo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva confronts Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and he says something interesting. He says, "Im eino tokeh le Malchiot, lama hu maskir? If you're not going to blow for Malchiot, why bother mentioning it?" And this word maskir and zichron and zecher lemikdash and remembering the mikdash, all the same roots, but meaning slightly different things. Here, maskir means mention. And his question is kind of interesting. It seems to assume
It seems to assume that the purpose of the blessings is to accompany the tekiot, is to accompany the blasts. So if you're not going to bother to blow when you say this extra special blessing, then why bother mentioning it? And so it sounds like what he's saying, if you could imagine this, I'm saying this very quickly, is that normally on a regular holiday, I have one blessing in the middle that talks about the sanctity of the day. I've taken this blessing that talks about the sanctity of the day and I've expanded it. And that Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofarot are somehow an expansion of the sanctity of the day. And the sanctity of the day is represented by the shofar blast. And possibly the purpose of me expanding this blessing is to accompany the shofar blast. Because in a moment, we're going to find out that there needs to be units of three of shofar blast. That's going to be the last Mishnah. And so if my whole purpose of expanding the blessing is to accompany the blast, then what the heck is the purpose of doing an extra blessing if I'm not going to blast? And this is also interesting. It seems to be that somehow there's an important link between these blessings and the blasts, that somehow the shofar blast needs the support of a blessing to enable it to give it purpose or to give it solidity and take it from the abstract into something more concrete, that it's going to enable it to go up before the divine in a form of prayer. And we're going to discuss this more as the chapter goes on. So he says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, I don't get what the heck you're talking about. And then he says his own view on how you do things. Now, from what he said up until now, we assume that he's going to blow when he says Malchiot. But there's also another change that he didn't mention that is a bit surprising. He says, Ela Omer Avot Ugvorot Kedushat Hashem. Rather say the blessing about the forefathers, the blessing about God's greatness and powers, and the blessing about the holiness of the divine name, right? V'kolel machiot in kedushat hayom v'tokea. And then add machiot into kedushat hayom, right? He moves the place where it's not just that he says do a blast, he moves the place and he puts machiot linked to the sanctity of the day and he says blow. Zichroniot v'tokea, shofarot v'tokea. So I blow with remembrance blessings. I blow with shofar blessings, v'omer, avodah, hodah, birkat konim. And then I say the last three the same, right? And what's interesting is it seems to be, and this links to what I just said to you before, that both Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and Rabbi Akiva agree that you only do the blasts in the middle, right? And the middle, they both agree, is linked to the sanctity of the day. And it's clear that the blasts are linked to the sanctity of the day. So if you're going to have something that's not in the middle, there's not going to be any blasts. Okay, so now we have to quickly explain what's their machloket about, right? They actually seem to agree that blasting should only be in the middle. They don't seem to agree about if Malchiot should get a blast, and since Rabbi Akiva thinks Malchiot needs a blast, he needs to move it, and he moves it. They both seem to agree that the concept of divine kingship is somehow linked to holiness. But just Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri thinks it's holiness of the divine name, and Rabbi Akiva thinks it's holiness of the day. So if I say to you very quickly, I think this is an intrinsic, deep philosophical dispute, and we follow Rabbi Akiva on this. But I think Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is saying, and this is probably why he doesn't blast for it, he says the divine kingship in this world, and I know in the modern day it's hard to imagine what it means to have a king, but the fact that the divine created the world and the fact that all those things we saw in the first chapter, why we're thankful for the cycle of life for the divine, those are objective things. Those are intrinsic to the holiness of the divine name. And therefore, those have nothing to do with human beings, right? If Kedushat Hayom has to do with human beings, that is an objective truth that God is the ruler of this world. And therefore, I put it in the objective truth section about the divine's holy name. And it's not unique to Rosh Hashanah at all. And therefore, I don't blast. Rabbi Akiva says something much more radical. Rabbi Akiva says, no, Kiddush Hayom, sanctification of the day, is something that the Jewish people actively do. They're active participants. And when I link the divine's kingship to this, it means that human beings must accept the divine and must create that relationship. It's the human being's view of this divine in the world and seeing holiness in the world that enables the divine to rule. Because if the subjects don't accept the king, then the king is nothing. And then maybe you could even think of the doo-doo-doo-doo as like a coronation of the king type of coronation. And there should be blast. And it's about, and there is a link between the human acceptance
of the divine, or seeking the divine and holiness in the world, and the creation of holiness in time, because there's a human element to both that Rabbi Akiva says. And overall, we follow Rabbi Akiva. If you look through your Machzor of Rosh Hashanah, you will see that Machiot is with, overall, is with Sanctity of the Day, and we blow there. There is still remnants of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri left over in our liturgy, right? During the 10 days of Tshuva, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the ending of the Sanctity of the Divine Name blessing, we say HaMelech HaKadosh, we add the word King. And if you look in the liturgy, like if you look at the phrase, this is just a hint for extra, Uvechein Ten Pachtecha, right? That is more Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's view, while the end of Aleinu Al Kein HaKavalah is more Rabbi Akiva's view, right? Is it that objectively God created the world and therefore God reigns, or is it that all the nations of the world need to accept the divine upon them, right? And maybe an acknowledgement of what Rosh Hashanah is like, and the sanctifying of this month, which sanctifies the cycle in the whole year, and linking to what we saw in the first chapter of understanding the divine in the life cycles and the divine relationship to human beings. And that partnership is an expression of what Rabbi Akiva is saying when he links the bracha to the Malchiyot, to the sanctity of the day. Okay, we're going to continue with the structure of the tefillah next time.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty, and thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning, and visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.